time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Now, the big crisis has to be the border. Not that you're not tired of that, friends, huh? The immigration, the illegal immigration. It's becoming, I think it has been, if we're not already past it, a tipping point in the nation. But there are a lot of factors that are playing into this that nobody's really talking about. And one of the biggest is the economic factors, of course. And we hear the drugs, we hear the crime, we hear other stories. But there's a big economic factor of this border crisis that's going to impact everybody. Every American will be impacted by this crisis, friends. Also, we have a really interesting segment you must hear later on. Attorney General William Barr will stop by and have a couple of comments there. I don't know if you caught that congressional testimony, but he was caught talking to himself in the congressional testimony. So interesting developments there. We'll share with you a little bit later in the program here, friends. Let's get to the top stories here on Viewpoint. I'd like you to welcome on here. Michael Johns is here. Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. He's a former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality here at America Out Loud. Ava's an author. She writes about her heroes, everyday men and women, our veterans, police officers, even farmers, hardworking middle-class folks, friends. All of that you can find on the America Out Loud bookstore. But let's start, Michael, Ava, with immigration. And specifically, I want to talk about the cost of immigration. Many of the Democrats are finally coming around and realizing that we do have a crisis on the border. Now, many of them are framing the crisis up a little differently. Some are calling it, of course, we heard the manufactured crisis. Then there's a humanitarian crisis. And there's a President Trump-created crisis. Michael, how do you frame this yourself when you hear all the talking points out there? What kind of a crisis really is this?
It's quite possibly the most serious crisis that we're confronting in the country. We have had, at the low end of the spectrum, about 11 million illegal aliens in this country. Some say that could be as high as 30 million. Disproportionate amount of illegal alien crime that's, you know, affected the country greatly. Great taxes on limited resources. An extraordinary cost that's presented by this, all sorts of complicating factors, and ultimately unfairness, because we do have a legal immigration process, and those who have stood in line and played by the rules have ultimately been not rewarded for that, and those who have entered illegally have been rewarded. So it's been wrong on every front, and it certainly is a crisis, not a manufactured one.
We've tried here this battle, Ava, about the crime, the drugs. You know, we've had the stories of the families who've lost loved ones. That's all been played out in the media. None of that has impacted the left and the Democrats to take action. None of that has been an impact. So as Michael just lays it out there, yeah, we have a crisis. We have a drug crisis. We have a terror crisis. We have all kinds of crises, but there's an economic crisis. I mean, I don't think really people are really understanding and paying attention to the dollars and cents of illegal immigration and what this is costing the country. But we're talking significant dollars here. And I mean, these reports are through the roof, some of the numbers. Isn't that going to be an impact for middle America and the 2020 election?
Oh, wow. If you don't call this a crisis, then I don't know really what is. It's draining us financially. Every illegal immigrant that comes here, there's about $70,000 that it costs us to even them into our system. There are 80 plus federal welfare programs that we have that these people generally end up on. Okay. Right. If we deport them, it costs us $6,000 to $11,000 a person. So it's much cheaper to have them exit the country if they're not here legally than it is to keep them on, because what's happening, these folks don't speak English, and we have, you know, English proficiency programs that are costing us tremendous amount of money. You know, we're looking at like $59 billion We're looking at 82,000 new teachers for low English proficiency programs. I mean, I could go on and on. I hang out way too much on Immigration Center for Immigration Studies. That's a fantastic spot to be, and you can read all of this information there.
They are a phenomenal organization. I mean, they're going to be on a little bit after, right after the segment, in fact, talking about this and more so in real numbers of this immigration problem. It befuddles me. Just recently here, last couple of days ago, let me tell you this here. Now, this should sum it up for everybody right here. So Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, right? So he came out on one of the programs, and it was CNN, your favorite program, and he wanted a wall. He come out, now this is the liberal columnist, and so get a load of this, Michael. Wolf Blitzer is interviewing him, okay? All right? And so he asked the question, and Friedman says, yeah, we need a wall. Well, Wolf's mouth just about dropped on the floor. He said, Tom, are you there? Wake up. I mean, get the CPR in here or something, please. Well, then listen to what Wolf Blitzer comes back and says. He says, Tom, but then that's what Donald Trump wants. So think about that just a moment. I mean, that's it, Ava. Is that not insane? So they know they need a wall, but Wolf Blitzer, the CNN dude, reminds him, Michael, but Tom, you're out of your mind. But that's what Donald Trump wants. We don't, come on. Why are you saying we need a wall, you schmuck?
Well, you could go back certainly a good number of years and find many of the same Democrats that today are the most vocal in opposing the Trump wall, who were themselves advocates of enhanced border security, including wall structures and fencing and whatnot. The idea that a physical border is not going to deter illegal immigration is absurd. One of the primary reasons that this crisis has endured now for 3-4 decades is that we have not had a sufficient securing of the border, despite numerous commitments that Congress has made historically, including in that famous Simpson-Mazzoli Act back in the 80s, to secure the border. It's been lots of rhetoric and no action, and I think precisely the reason is exactly what you said, Malcolm, and that is that Democrats at some point along the way began to calculate that there was political advantage that they would deem from illegal immigration, both in perceived votes down the road as amnesty pressures inevitably build, and also from the standpoint of really a tipping of the balance of the culture in the country, with almost immediately day one welfare-dependent illegals from third world countries, many times with limited or no English-speaking capabilities, no developed skills, weighing on state and federal welfare programs and tipping, I think, the political culture in that respect. So that it really has been exclusively a political calculation. There's every reason to secure this border, no real compelling not to. There's a national security reason to secure the border. Yeah. There is, as you correctly suggested, a great public health reason to secure the border. There's economic reasons to secure the border. And ultimately, there's the very definition of our nation, because as the president has correctly said, we're not a nation without borders.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we're not going to be a nation anymore if we don't get this straight. This is the biggest crisis in our lifetime. It's certainly biggest in my lifetime. There's nothing more serious than this, people. This is not your father's country anymore if this thing doesn't get handled quickly. So we better get these people off the edge or the power trip they're on for sure. We'll come back more on immigration a little bit after, friends, with the Center for Immigration Studies, talk a little bit more in depth about some of these issues and the stats and numbers behind it all. Listen, we covered this next story last week briefly, and I want to touch on it right now about this prescription of death, these pills that are being circulated. There were all rings of doctors and pharmacists being locked up and being caught. I mean, in the last 10 days, it's become, I mean, the FBI is all over this, and drug enforcement, you know, efforts are trying to lock this thing down. I mean, one report of 65 doctors and pharmacists arrested and distributed more than 300 million pills. Perhaps, Ava, this, perhaps the conspiracy is maybe that, from this way of thinking, if they keep the people high on marijuana by legalizing it everywhere through the country and then fast distribute all these pills and medications and illegal narcotics throughout middle America, well, at that point, everyone's too high to really care anymore. What difference does it make, right?
You just hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly my theory of why this is happening. It's to keep us completely out of the loop. Okay. They don't want a populace that can stand up and read and think and make their own decisions. These people in government are despicable, in my opinion, to have even allowed these things to go on as long as they have. And the great, great numbers of fentanyl coming across the border illegally as well. I mean, this is some of these raids, I'm sure you guys have read it. Fentanyl, it's enough fentanyl to kill like 50,000 people. You know, I mean, it's like, and more than that. So it's just, this is something we really, really have to get our arms around, because it will just destroy our country.
Michael, how do we go about distributing that fentanyl at the DNC committee meeting there? No, I'm only kidding. Michael, just strike that, Your Honor. Michael, so listen, I never did drugs, so I'm not a real good candidate to talk about why people like all this stuff. I mean, I can't even take a pain med without getting ill. So I never did it. What do you think the attraction is all this? I mean, it escapes me, quite frankly. I don't get it.
Well, it's predominantly ultimately driven by financial gain. I think, you know, in the cases of physicians that have been involved, there's been financial gain involved in shortcutting a system. The other thing that's seldom mentioned is that this crisis is very closely correlated with Barack Obama's Medicaid expansion, in the sense that when he expanded the state Medicaid programs, in essence, affording vastly greater access to these medications, inevitably some percentage of those ended up being sold on the street. And that's and this is a complicated question too, because no one wants to diminish the fact that there are very legitimate cases that require pain management in this country. And opioids, while they have, you know, killed roughly 700,000 people since 1999, have also been crucially important to pain management in many cases. So, you know, we have a clear correlation between opioid use and transitions to disorders and heroin use. So it is a bridge drug beyond dispute. Many people who had no intention of developing addiction qualities or addiction traits fall into it, and it becomes really an issue that does require ultimately federal, state, governmental attention, but not overreaction, sensible regulation and prosecutions like the ones that are being pursued right now against those that are gaming and using the system in ways that are detrimental to the
country. Spoken like a good conservative, sensible regulation. We always have to say that word sensible in front of them. We can't let them see that. Oh, yeah, regulate. It is, you're right.
And because so many crises that the country confronts end up being firstly ignored by government and then end up being overreacted by government.
That's so right.
And so good people end up being affected by it. So it's good. It's crucial here to deny
it. It's good advice. Yeah. And quite frankly, again, there's greed in every corner. And in this case, it's the doctors and pharmacists who are taking advantage, clearly. And as you say, obviously money is the ultimate prize here, greed. Well, listen, I want to talk about a little politics with you both here. And you've heard of the Dirty Dozen. Have you heard of the Hapless 20? Okay, so let's talk about this top 20 here. Joe Biden is in. Okay, Michael, Joe Biden. So right now he's popular. He just put his foot in the pond here, and this is the third time. Is the third time the charm for Joe? He would be like 110 when he enters the Oval Office. Is that good?
Well, there's strong cases to be made against the Biden candidacy, one of which is he's never really caught on as a national political figure in the two previous races that you mentioned. He also, I think, would be very hard-pressed to defend an eight-year failed legacy as Obama's vice president. People do not, and American voters do not, look upon those 8 years as successful ones for the country. His fingerprints are all over that, even though he has interestingly come out and told Obama he does not seek his endorsement, which I think is very telling that an individual who potentially could have, or very early on, seized Obama's endorsement has asked the former president not to endorse him. But I think he has a very, very poor track record. The only compelling case to be made for him is this potential that some Democrats see that he would advance a progressive ideology under a perceived,
exactly.
campaign of moderation. And there's nothing, there really is nothing particularly moderate about Biden's historical. Right,
let me ask you this now, Michael. Give me a quick answer to this. But as you look at the whole field of 20, who are the top two or three that you think have a shot at this? Really, truly.
Well, Biden, in many ways, because of his large fundraising capabilities and name recognition, Bernie Sanders, also because of name recognition and the progressive network that he has placed behind him. O'Rourke, interestingly, I think because of his also his grassroots fundraising capability, and perhaps least mentioned, but I think most concerning, in Kamala Harris, because she is able to generate progressive support and yet has a track record that's, before entering Congress, not one necessarily of progressives. All are indisputably hugely
you never know. Like politics, you never really know. Ava, out of the top 20 now, let's take a look at that. Mm-hmm. Now, I know last week you didn't think Biden was going to enter the race. He's in it now. We know that. But there's another interesting point I'm hearing out there. By the way, I've heard this three times. You hinted to me on this, and I've heard two other sources tell me what I'm going to tell you all now. And that is, and this is in the last couple of days, these messages have come into me at the network here. They believe, people honestly believe, now I don't, but people believe that Michelle Obama is going to put her hand in the ring here. In fact, they are saying, sources I'm hearing, is that Michelle Obama and Joe Biden would be the ticket and would be a ticket of interest for Democrats. What do you say to that?
I've been one of the people that's been saying that. So Joe Biden on The View, that was his litmus test right there, okay? And he flunked. And you have to understand that Barack Obama in the background at Organizing for Action, 2 miles from the White House, he is the one who's working with Justice Democrats and the Young Turks, and he's schooling these people. He has a school for radical leftist Democrats. That's really what it should be called. And he's the one calling the shots. Nobody else is, really. You have to understand that.
Right.
And he's going to be the kingmaker. And the king that he wants in the White House is himself. Right, this man is so inflated. His ego is so
big. And that's what people are telling me, that that's his that's his entryway back into the White House there.
Exactly.
Michael, are you real quickly here? Avril, I want to stay with you, but I just want to ask you, Michael, do you believe there's any, is there any sense to that with Michelle Obama in the race? Do you hear that anywhere?
I have heard of that. I don't believe it's going to happen. I think she's a beneficiary of high name recognition without the cost of any documented voting record or having ever been forced to really lead or make tough decisions.
Right.
And that does place her in an intriguing position. But I think the American people hopefully see through that as well.
All right. Well, that's exactly it. But you put it out there real well. Ava, now, here's the thing that I want to talk a moment here in our couple of moments we have left on endless entitlements. And this is a segment. I want to do another deep segment on this just ahead in the weeks ahead. And Michael, I want to have you back and really talk about this, okay? Because this is right in your wheelhouse. The Taxon of America is a co-founder and former with the Tea Party. This is a big story. And I mean, listen, when you're in a ties to the 2020 race, because when you look, Ava, at the new Green Deal, free college, the erase millennials' debt, unlimited free stuff, I mean, it's a fabulous, utopia kind of world here. I mean, certainly not one that any of us grew up in, but this is, and the way they seem to be wanting to do it is they want to play the Robin Hood of impact. Anybody who's successful or has done anything accomplished, they want them to pay through the nose, and they want to give it to all of the deadbeats. And I use that word affectionately, Faber, if it's possible. What do you say?
We're dangerously close to socialism already in this country. I hate to break this news to people, but we are. What we need to be doing is removing entitlement programs. And these are, the wealthier. We keep layering more and more on, and we could dive into this very deeply. But the problem is, any success that we have, it will come from the Constitution. We have to go back, not we don't have to layer on more and, you know, more giveaway programs, because eventually it just becomes Marxism. We all know that.
Right, right. Well, and there we seem to be using those words a lot these days, Michael. Marxism, socialism, which are, in other words, many people say for progressivism. People would argue that point, of course.
What are we progressing to? That's always my question.
That's it is a good question, isn't it now? Well, it's right off the cliff by some standards. So looking at these entitlements. Michael, just tell me, what's your rallying call for these endless entitlements that are being put forth by candidates?
The federal government and nor state government should be in the business of picking winners and losers in our society. Individuals ultimately have to have accountability, or we have a utterly politicized society. The role of the federal government is very clearly defined in our Constitution. And one of the great crises of modern times has been the consistent deviations from those specified powers into these boundless programs that have ultimately proven detrimental to the country in many ways and costly, immensely costly to hardworking American taxpayers. There's no historical example of a country taxing itself to prosperity.
The power is with we the people, always has been from day one, and it is today as fact. And that's the lesson, people, I want you to take. Again, it's we the people. That's the driving mechanism in force of this country. And we've got to raise the voices louder. We need to take some of this back, because it's getting insane. So it's really becoming insane out there. A big thank you, friends, here to Michael Johns, Ava Armstrong in the top news here. So next up, the Center for Immigration Studies, the immigration political meltdown at the border. And then again, as I promised you up front, a special appearance here, A.G. Barr, the attorney general I'm speaking of. Well, he was caught talking to himself during the congressional testimony. And we've got some really very interesting things that were heard on the mic and some quotes and stuff. And anyways, we're going to have a special segment with him just ahead there. Friends, stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. The 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends. And as we said, immigration is the big topic du jour. It's actually the topic du generation. We all should be concerned, because it's the biggest crisis, really, of our lifetimes, I believe, and what's happening on all of our borders and the lack of security for the United States. You have to remember, friends, we're at a different point of time. We're in a different juncture of history. And, you know, sometimes things are mandated because you have to keep up with the world and things change. And things are far different today than they were in 1950. Let's just say that. And of course, I was not here at 1950, but I'm just pointing that out, friends. Also in 1975, they were different. And let's take a deep dive now, and I'd like you to welcome on here Dr. Stephen Steinleit. He's the senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. Dr. Steinleit is one of the nation's leading authorities on immigration, trends of policy, and the politics behind it all. And there are plenty and plenty of politics behind it all. In fact, that is the driving mechanism. So, Stephen, what they're doing is they do not want Donald Trump to have any victory whatsoever. And they look at this immigration thing as a victory, because he ran on it when he came down that escalator. He ran on that whole thing, and it's gotten totally out of context. And really, they're willing to throw the country by the curb, are they not? That's what it is, right?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right, Malcolm, that part of it is denying Trump anything at all. I mean, obviously, we've come out of 2 years of an essentially a coup attempt that failed, and they're not giving up. So there's nothing that will stop them. But what's fascinating is the way this cuts, and that is that they are, on the one hand, denying that there's even a crisis on the border, and you notice how much they fought the president's declaration of an emergency.
That's right.
I mean, and of course, everything on the ground shows us that we are experiencing the greatest surge we've seen since 2006. And you know, you made a point earlier on that if you let me just come back to it, it's really important for people to understand the crisis that we're looking at is, in some respects, just it's enormous and enormously important. But this crisis is nothing new. We have been in it for 60 years. And I've never heard a logician or a philosopher declare that a crisis of great duration is somehow less a crisis by virtue of its longevity. I mean, this crisis is undoing the country. And when Friedman says what he says, yeah. And Trump, by the way, he in a way is in a fascinating bind. He is 100% right to want the wall. He is 100% right to want to fix the holes in our laws on asylum, which is driving this whole business. And he also understands that for him, politically, to do anything else would be suicide. I mean, the most important promise he made when he declared his candidacy was to build the wall. And we know by survey research that fully 43% of his base would walk if he doesn't do it. So,
well, that's what they're afraid of, and that's what the left is afraid of. They know that, and that's why they won't give it to him. Clearly, it's all political. I mean,
it's all political, and also they don't, you know, it's you know, the left and the right perceive this situation in radically different ways.
That's right.
For conservatives, and I would say even centrists, they see this as a grotesque, as an invasion of America, tremendous violation of our laws, our sovereignty. The left sees this as a providential bonanza of votes pouring in. For them, this is opportunistic. It's as simple as that. They see this as a benefit. Yeah. Not as a disaster. Yeah.
So listen, this is really good what we've just discussed here, because I want you to understand people first. It's perfect analysis where we're at right now, and I want to turn the corner and talk about economics here. But let me say, this is the erosion of the fabric of America here. And Dr. Steinle puts it out there just absolutely perfectly. You hear it. It's an opportunity for one side. It's a problem for the other side in a crisis. But really, it's the erosion of our country. It's the erosion of the fabric of America, people, no matter how you look at it. And the political stakes are what they're worried about. They're not worried about the sanctity of American life. They're not worried about future generations. They're not worried about drugs running rampant through our cities and towns and countries. They're not worried about lack of jobs and economic problems throughout the country. They're not worried about terrorists coming in. They're not worried about drug dealers and cartels coming in. I mean, they're not worried about any of this stuff. They're just worried about their power for the next election. That's all. Now, people, wake up and smell the coffee, will you? And somebody, will you open the door and let the left smell the coffee, for God's sakes? And at least get the constituents not to support the lunatics who are running for office. I want people to understand, please, the one big thing in the room that nobody really ever talks about is the economic impact to middle America, to people who matter, to our families, to our lives. That's what really matters here, Stephen. And yet, this is not even really discussed, but that's really, let's talk about economics. That's the biggest problem of illegal immigration or even legal immigration to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. Malcolm, I think it's very important that people listening to the program understand that while, of course, you know, we see illegal immigration as a particular problem because it shows contempt for our laws, in real terms, the great majority, I mean, the overwhelming majority of the people coming to the country now and who have been coming to the country ever since 1965 are low-skill, low-educated folks. This is whether they're legal or illegal. 76% of legal immigrant families are on at least one major welfare program. Even illegal immigrants, by the way, a lot of people don't know this or are given misinformation. Illegal immigrants get welfare. they get food stamps for their kids are on SNAP programs, let alone, just think for a second, anyone in this country is taking medical services, and of course, people who can't afford insurance, they get the most expensive car and they go into hospital emergency rooms. Who's paying for the schools for these kids? 100% of all the increase in students in our schools is immigrant. I can go on and on. Police, fire, water, sewage, sanitation. There's a figure out there which I think is really, as it were, laughable, and it puts the number that we spend, by the way, not that it's a small number, on illegal immigration at something like $180 billion a year. Now, that's predicated on a phony number which has been out there for as long as I've worked for the Center for Immigration Studies. This is year 15. That number, we're told again and again and again, there are between 11 and 12 million immigrants. Amazing, isn't it? You know, we see the constant floods in, we see these huge surges. Between 2000 and 2010, we had the largest surge in our entire history, and yet somehow, it's always 11 to 12 million. It's hard. I'm sorry. Yale and MIT did a study that came out just about 5 months ago that said no, the number is north of 25 million. That figure, take that figure, and it's more like half a trillion a year.
Exactly.
To support this population. And here's the thing, you know, you hear again and again and again from people who want to have cheap labor, mm-hmm. and this is a line put out by Chamber of Commerce, by manufacturer associations and so on. Well, you know, these folks are really helping because they're working and paying taxes.
Right.
Well, let me tell you, the wages that a typical immigrant worker makes are so low, for example, in the jobs that they tend to cluster in. If you think of all those women working in nail salons and all those, they make about $9.80 an hour. If you think of the guys in construction who work their backs off, they make about $12.50 an hour. They will never make enough in wages to pay the taxes required to support the public assistance programs on which they will be dependent for decades. In fact, they are a gigantic net drain on the economy. And here, if you'll permit me, just a little bit of futurism, you know.
Okay, all right.
The next big thing, you know, we talk about the next big thing coming down the road in the in the economy and workforce, is the rise of and everyone's beginning to write about it and talk about it of robotics and
that's right,
and
AI,
and machine learning and automation on steroids.
Right.
We are going to need. First of all, we're going to need a radically smaller workforce. This is, by the way, going to hit American workers very, very hard. But it's going to be the apocalypse for immigrant workers. We don't need a single one. In fact, it's insanity to bring in low-skilled workers into a post-industrial society where the means for upward mobility, which used to be the manufacturing sector, is gone. And by the way, 36% of what was left went in the Great Recession in 2009. So they're stuck. It's not their fault. It's they've come 100 years too late, and they're on a broken escalator. They're not going anywhere.
I want to understand what you think or what you believe is the stimulus for this really uptick, if you will, major uptick in families that are seeking asylum, because there are a lot of families thrown in amongst all of these other people, young guys, people we don't know who they are. And keep in mind, these are just the people we know where the cameras are. Now, you have to remember something, people, and this is the most important thing I tell you right now. There's so much more border that there are no cameras on. And there really, I mean, there's not a CNN camera or an MSN camera or ABC camera all the way through there. Let's just face it. So do you realize that we have large stretches of our border that have absolutely no, you just walk right across like you're walking across Main Street, right on the sidewalk. There's not a damn thing anybody, because nobody's there. There's That's nothing right. to do. I mean, come on, people. Now, let's talk about that, because listen, anybody with any brain cells here, I mean, where do you think the biggest crux of the, and so when we count the beans and the data and the numbers and from the smart people who think they know what they're doing, Stephen, I mean, there's so much we don't know. there's so much of that border we have no idea. I think a lot of the smart people down there and these people who are making money, the cartels and all of this off of it, and they're obviously coming where there's nobody. There are no cameras. They're not foolish enough to come through the cameras or where the cars and trucks are.
That's
They're going through the woods. So, I mean, we can't even possibly put a data point on that, which really leaves me uncomfortable because it tells me we are way past the point of no return, Dr. Steinle. I mean, we're way past that no point of return here. And I don't think middle America is going to wake up one day soon. And it's going to be too late.
Yep, I'm very concerned about it. And you're posing two very important points. And let me take really the second first, because it's extremely important. When you're saying, you know, it's always where the cameras are located, where the daily, where the headlines come. And by the way, there are not enough headlines. It's this story should be front page news every single day. And of course, we notice that that's not the case. But you have this surge from Central America, and I will talk about what's feeding it. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the border and customs control people report that in the last fiscal year, they made 800,000 apprehensions. That is to say, people trying to cross the border illegally in those areas that you're talking about, not the ones not going through the posts to go and surrender yourself to authorities, but the old-fashioned way using coyotes. Now, to try to get a metric on this, Border Patrol has said what they say is that we believe that we apprehend one-third of those trying to cross.
Right.
So if they caught 800,000, mm-hmm. how many got into the country successfully?
Exactly.
And so that's why I think, you know, we end up in these ridiculous discussions about 11 to 12 million people. I don't think we have any idea how many people are here illegally. I mean, if the Border Patrol itself admits we only get 1 in 3. But in terms of what's pushing, I mean, there are two things that we need. You know, we need physical walls and barriers, mm-hmm. and we also need barriers in the law to stop the insanity.
That's right, the laws.
That's driving, and by the way, all of this could be fixed by Congress. It has shown no interest in doing so. Now,
and you don't see that change in any. That's not going to change. I mean, they're not going to fix this before 2020, and they're not going to probably fix it after 2020 either. So we're kind of in a rough spot here, aren't we?
No, I think the American people are going to have to get very serious with their members of Congress and say, look, you know, you're the only thing we know you really care about is your incumbency. But your incumbency is going to rest on this because there are two crazy things that are driving the stuff from Central America. Mm-hmm. By the way, you know, everyone talks again and again, you know, Central America is very violent places. But the fact is that violence in Nicaragua and Guatemala, it has fallen mm-hmm. precipitously in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. But that has not stopped. In fact, if anything, the flow has continued. For a very simple reason, because word has gotten back home that all you have to do is show up with a child and it is a get out of jail card.
That's it.
It's as simple as that. We have.
And they're using kids as pawns. I mean, the kids are being abused beyond belief. And like you said, all they want to do is put one foot on our property. And as it was pointed out early in the program, as soon as they get just one toe on our property, it's going to cost you money, people out there. Taxpayers are going to have to pay whether we send them back illegally at our cost or whether we throw them into the country and at our cost, right?
That's exactly right.
Do you have any words of wisdom, Dr. Steinle?
Do I have any words of wisdom? Yes. Move to New Zealand. No, I don't mean that. The fact is, there are some things that we can do. Mm-hmm. Now, every smart thing that we try to do, some court blocks. And by the way, that's an issue that we really need to address. Why mm-hmm. is it that a single district court can make a ruling for the entire country?
That's right.
And the caravans that are coming down, mm-hmm. which are obviously well organized, it's like a military campaign. Do you know they have lawyers? They have lawyers
exactly.
advising them on
all
how
organized.
To talk
it's
when they
organized.
Get to the border, okay? President has suggested, has made the suggestion of having the credible fear thing made more real. Of course, the Ninth Circuit mm-hmm. struck it down.
Right.
Also, an enormously important issue is going after people who are here overstaying their visas.
Right.
This only in the last few days the president's talked about that.
In fact, he's going to sign a president memorandum, by the way. The news was here in the last day or so directing the Secretary of State and Homeland Security to find ways to combat these overstays. That's the news he has
it's
been...
It's enormously important. And also, ending... There's a big case in front of the Supreme Court about the census. And its impact on immigration, I think, is gigantic. Mm-hmm. Because the point about the census is the purpose of the census, among other things, its most important purpose is to set up, is to define what our political system is, where districts are.
Well, and the left is trying to use the illegal to obviously put that seesaw in their court here, to tilt it there. Do you think we win the Supreme Court? What happens there?
I think it's a slam dunk that we will win.
Wow, interesting.
And if that happens,
okay. All right.
There's a great deal less motivation on the part of the Democrats to get all these folks in if they can't harvest their votes.
All right.
I was 2 years old in 1950, and I already was very keen on this issue. I mean, I was focused on that.
I was born well after that. Let's be clear on that. I mean, come on, look at my picture. I'm still a young guy. I mean, come on.
No.
Dr. Steinle, it is always a pleasure.
Likewise, Malcolm.
Thrilled to have you on here, buddy. You always speak the truth, and you speak it in such a way that people can understand. It's a lot of information here, friends. Immigration is it's a concern. The illegal immigration, the borders, it's a big concern. We want to put a spotlight on where it matters here, not just talk in riddles and comical thoughts, but really try to get you to rally everybody out there to understand the gravity of this situation. All right, friends, a big thank you again to Dr. Steven Steinle. And up next here now, Attorney General William Barr. He was caught and said that he was talking to himself during the congressional testimony. Now, friends, if you want watch his picture on video, or you see A.G. Barr and the looks on his face. Boy, if looks could talk. Oh, my golly. Well, we got that coming up next. What did A.G. Barr say to himself at the congressional testimony? We have the scoop, people, only on Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
I mean, the shenanigans being played at the congressional testimony were obviously in clear view for everybody. Everybody knew there were politics at play. But it was interesting, if you watch the facial expressions and body language of the Attorney General William Barr, my friends, it is priceless, priceless. And in this next segment here, as I promised you in the show, we're going to channel his inner thoughts here. So let me start here. The chairman of the House Appropriations Commerce, Justice, Science, and Related Agency Subcommittee, Jose Serrano, Democrat of New York, led off with his meandering opening statement when he got to the part where he mentioned the elephant in the room. Well, of course, that's the Mueller report. Attorney General Barr mumbled to himself while listening to Serrano.
Wrong elephant, dude. That Mo-Russia deal was as fictitious as Dumbo. The real elephant is Spygate.
Well, Serrano then expressed concerns about the speedy process by which Barr produced his letter. And then we heard William Barr say to himself,
"And we've had 3 weeks to read the report, doofus. I mean, how long does it take you to read 300 pages? And we've been talking to Mueller all along, but you already knew that, right?"
Well, Serrano mentioned that the New York Times article that claimed Mueller's summary documents were ignored in preparation of Barr's letter. Again, William Barr could not hold it to himself. We heard him again.
"Yeah, we already know who leaked that information. She's going down for prior leaks. And in this case, the leak was bogus, which is what the New York Times generally is anyway.
Well, the chairwoman for the House Committee for Appropriations, Representative Nita Lowey, Democrat of New York again, then called Barr's handling of the Mueller report and the letter unacceptable. And she was very clear in her words. Well, Barr didn't like that. And he had something to say, again, to himself.
You wouldn't know what's unacceptable if it jumped up and hit you in the face. Stick it where the sun don't shine. And by the way, I'm following the law regarding redacting parts of the report, too. You can use crumpled up printouts of the redacted parts as a suppository for all I care.
Boy, oh boy, things are getting heated now, friends. Well, Serrano then asked if anyone on Mueller's team was involved in drafting the Barr letter. Well, Barr was getting a little confused at this point.
Oh, what's for dinner tonight?
Exactly. And Nita Lowey, she then came out and asked whether there was any debate about the contents of the letter and questioned how it could have been produced in 24 hours. I mean, come on. And Barr said to himself,
as you well know, you political hack, we've been in direct consultation with Mueller's crew for months, and we knew the gist of what the report would say. Why don't you leave this to professionals and stop grandstanding?
And friends, there was a lot of grandstanding going on, let me tell you, as Representative Matt Cartwright, Democrat out of Pennsylvania, takes his turn, as they all do at these congressional hearings, friends, and he asks a question. Well, after meandering about Obamacare, he asked Barr whether 12 million people will lose their coverage if Obamacare is repealed. And you could see Barr thinking to himself again,
I'm the Attorney General, not the Health and Human Services Secretary, you dumbass. Go ask Alex Azar for that answer.
Well, again, it was getting heated, friends, by the moment here, as Representative Grace Meng, Democrat of New York, she asked Barr whether the White House was involved in preparing his letter on the Mueller report. Barr says,
I'm dealing with spoiled children here. I don't have a blue six. Go fish.
Well, as you see, Barr was thoroughly enjoying himself at this point, friends. He was actually playing Dr. Seuss games with himself. But Meng asked Barr if enforcement under the Voting Rights Act is a DOJ priority, to which Barr thought,
not as big a priority for us as prosecuting voter fraud, biatch.
Well, and then, of course, the Republican turned Democrat, Representative Charlie Crist, we're talking about, out of Florida, the recent Democrat, asked Barr about the recent reports that members of the special counsel's office said Barr's memo understated the level of malfeasance by Trump. And Barr thought to himself,
hey, didn't you used to be a Republican once upon a time? Could have fooled me. By the way, I used some of Mueller's own language in my letter, so try again.
And of course, the Democrat out of Hawaii, Representative Ed Case, he said there are exceptions that some grand jury material can be released. And Barr thought to himself,
good grief, how much more of this rookie lawyer crap do I need to listen to here?
Well, as you can see, friends, Barr was having a thoroughly enjoyable time at this point. And of course, Case comes out and says, we're sitting here, from my perspective, with virtually unlimited discretion for you to redact from that document. Maybe if I trusted my government more, but I don't. And Barr thought,
you're shitting me, right? I'll bet you trusted Obama's crew to conduct illegal domestic surveillance and unmasking American citizens, didn't you?
And now, as we get to the end of the program here in the congressional hearings, friends, Barr had one final thought to himself.
This hearing is a joke. I'm really here to notify Congress of the impending indictments of a number of sitting Democrat congressmen for leaked classified information to the media, as well as for participation in a seditious coup.
What's most fascinating about all of this is the last piece where Barr thought to himself about these indictments. That, my friends, will probably be breaking news in the days and weeks ahead. And I can tell you this, we'll look forward to bringing you that news here on Viewpoint this Sunday. Now, please welcome onto the show here, Captain Stu Swirk is here. He's a retired naval officer with operational experience in the Middle East and Western Pacific. He is presently a semi-retired defense contractor, living the good life. in South Dakota, friends. He's a weekly columnist and a terrific guy here on America Out Loud. And by the way, he also channels A.G. Barr very, very effectively. It's amazing. And you can read that column, friends, in its full point there, right on the front page of America Out Loud. All right. I guess the congressional hearings and all, and back to the last final point of the indictments. Let me start right there, because that it really is, no pun intended, but the big, big elephant in the room. What's your sense right now when we talk about this whole game flipping on the other side, Stu? What do you think, potential, again, indictments here in the weeks and months ahead? What's your sense of that? Do you think we're close? Do you think Barr is, and Horowitz and company, do you think we're anywhere on this?
Well, we know there are certain actions that are in place. Barr himself promised that he was going to look into the spying, and he used the word spying, no less, into the Trump campaign and so forth. And we also know there's an OIG report that's in the queue. But I think what's the most telling is that over the last week, we've seen essentially a kind of a media offensive by Trump and his conservative media allies. He's done interviews on Fox News a couple times. He's made some great statements in some of his campaign style stops. And there have been a number of interesting side disclosures, if you want to call it that, or revelations of new things that we didn't know about before. Like, for example, the fact that Priestap, the assistant FBI counterintelligence division guy in a deposition to Judicial Watch, identified the Obama White House as one of the places, the sources for the Hillary Clinton emails when they were out doing that email server investigation back in 2016. Mm-hmm. So there's been lots of disclosures like this that are leading me to conclude that something's really big happening here. And part of this is an education of the public through a media campaign.
Yeah. What's interesting, Stu, with all of that is that we're hearing nothing about this in the media because they don't want to report on any of this. But I think you're right. The sense that people are getting out there is that something is happening here. Because if you start to connect all these pieces, then you realize that not everything is what we see right now in black and white. The question is, what's the timing on that? Now, one of the concerns, Stu, is that the 2020 election is coming now. We're obviously, whether we like it or not, the general election is coming into full campaign mode. And a lot of the times you hear politicians say in Washington, well, we can't do that because we're in an election cycle. Well, we can't make that decision. We're in an election cycle. We can't fix immigration. We're in an election cycle. We can't indict those people because we're in an election cycle. And I've heard that a lot. Do you see that as a problem here as we get closer and closer to election?
It could be. I mean, certainly the political class has used that as a kind of a wedge to stop these kinds of actions as things get closer to an election. But I believe we have all of this calendar year at the very least to deal with some of these really prickly criminal activities. A.G. Barr is going to testify on the 1st of May. Mm-hmm. And as an aside, I think that's a great day to pick because Trump is really big on symbolism. And of course, 1 May is what used to be called Red Labor Day, Communist Labor Day. So what a great time for him to come before Congress and testify about some of the FISAgate, Spygate activities and maybe potentially blow the roof off.
That could be interesting. I mean, looking at May 1st there, Stu, I don't know. I got to tell you, he's an interesting man for interesting times, Stu. I mean, when you think about William Barr as the AG right now and kind of his return to Capitol Hill is amazing. When he used the words upper echelons, he used, those were his words, and he used the words spying did happen. I'm going to say to you, Stu, I think that was a pivotal moment in this whole conversation. I think that's going to come back, that hearing that we just talked about and did the parody on. And those words he used, I think that's going to come back to a real turning point of this whole thing. What say you?
Well, I would say that upper echelon includes what I used to refer to as the criminal firm of Comey, Clapper, and Brennan. That's certainly at least part of that upper echelon and may even go higher into the Obama White House and the old Hillary Clinton campaign. So the answer would seem to indicate, based on looking and analyzing his comments, is that these people have something to really be concerned about at this point in time.
They have something to be concerned with at this point in time. The ironic thing here, people, is this. The something to be concerned with, I'm going to tell you something right now, goes back way beyond and way before Trump ever got into office. So Think about that a moment here. Much of this even started well before he was going to be even a candidate. What you're speaking about with Brandon Clapper, Comey, oh my, and that whole group. You know that.
Precisely. There was a there's a Fisk court review of FISA abuse. That's a separate report from the OIG report that's coming out and what Barr is doing from a Spygate point of view. And apparently that Fisk court review said came out and said that the Obama regime had actually been abusing FISA for domestic surveillance for something like 4 or 5 years before the election in 2016. So there's a lot more to this that meets the eye and that most people don't know because the legacy media has obfuscated it purposely. The different agencies of the Obama government that were involved in FISAgate, spying on Americans and then spying on the Trump campaign in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, the State Department was involved, the CIA, the FBI, DOJ, yeah, and the Obama White House. I mean, good grief.
We call that in poker, we call that a full house, buddy. So, exactly. You know, I will tell you, this is, I mean, we'll predict right now at this moment, friends, we're on the verge, I believe, of some historical things to happen in our political circles. With what Captain Stu's work lays out there and what I'm talking about right now, we're talking, yeah, it's a coup, all right. It's also, friends, a political mafia. So even before the coup, it was a political mafia. So think about that as you're having your breakfast cereal here and your coffee, okay? I mean, political mafia and then coup. Anything to keep, you get some guy that wants to drain a swamp? I mean, come on. You can't drain the swamp if that's what these people are infested in. I mean, they're showering in the swamp is what they do, Stu. I mean, you can't drain it. I'll tell you what, they never thought that ride down the escalator would end up putting him in the Oval Office. And it's a game changer, and everybody knows it's a game changer. And now it's going to be we the people that are going to have to deal with this. There's going to be a lot of garbage left here after they come and house clean and happen, Stu. You know that, right?
No question. I mean, one thing we've learned in the age of Trump is to pay careful attention to what he tweets and what he says in public. Because when he names names and he uses phrases, he means it. And usually what happens is those named people are, in fact, visited Trump and Freud on them, so to speak, meaning they get their comeuppance and the truth of the matter does come out, and usually that truth confirms exactly what the president says.
But really, there's got to be a rhyme and reason to a lot of this, friends. It's called, you know, what do you call it? Spike in the punch, I guess, Stu, you call it? Spike in the punch, maybe? Or, you know, or ground in the football, or, right? What do you call it?
I use a military phrase. It's called a preparation of the battle space. What that means is he's educating the public and getting them ready for the actions to come, for the indictments to come in this case.
That's it. That's it, Stu. Captain Stu Swirk there, yeah. That's great analysis, Stu, and thank you for the parody as well. And when you mentioned the word preparation just a moment ago, I was thinking with this conversation more of less preparation H, by the way. But that's another story for another day, brother. In any event, friends, you know, this is what we call the out loud truth. I mean, you like it, you don't, but, you know, you can't deny it. People. There's a lot to happen here. Very interesting conversation. What a great program today. I really had fun. I hope you did as well, had fun listening to it. Pour another cup of coffee, friends. Let's have a grand day here. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. There's so much there. I mean, it moves quickly, and there's conversations happening. You want to get up to speed on what's going on, not only in your political life, but the social, cultural world. Friends, just take a look back there. We're on the front lines here of America, and we are we the people. That's our message, we the people. Listen, the Out Loud Truth continues back at AmericaOutloud.com.